Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Marcy Ann Cheek, and this is my show, Say What? Where? When? And most importantly, why? I've been asking why my whole life. And the last 18 years, I've been doing weddings at the beach in Laguna Beach, California. And I began asking, why do we do all these things that we do at the weddings? And so the answer to that question is tradition. There are so many traditions that have been passed down to us through the ages. And I thought it might be fun and interesting to look into some of these and find out why we do them. And in some cases, do we want to keep doing them? So we've already talked about the fathers giving the brides away and bridesmaids all dressed alike and saying obey in the wedding ceremony. And tonight I'm going to talk about the best man and the bridal bouquet and tossing the bouquet and eating cake, cutting and eating the cake and having children in the wedding. So let's just start right off with the best man. In the olden days, well, first let's talk about today. Today a groom can choose a brother or a best friend, or sometimes even his father can stand up with him as a best man. I had a wedding today at the beach. Salt Creek Beach in Dana Point. Beautiful day we had today in California. It was in the low 70s. Their waves were about 4 to 6 foot. Beautiful, crashing out there. And in the wintertime, we do get the sun setting in the ocean in Southern California. But if you'll look at the map, Southern California faces south. So it only sets in the ocean in the winter when the earth is tipped up, and we get the sun going down, beautiful sunset, and we had that sun starting to go down tonight. But in the summertime, the sun sets in the west, and so it sets behind the cliffs, and we don't get it going down in the ocean. So if you want to have a Southern California wedding and you want the sun going down in the ocean, then you would need to do it between December 20th and March 20th, we get these beautiful sunset weddings. Well, my groom tonight had his brother stand up with him, and they weren't twins, but I kept getting them mixed up. they were dressed exactly alike. The boys had on these white gauzy shirts that they wore outside of tan dockers, and that's a very, very popular beach wedding dress outfit for men being married at the beach. And so that was, he had his brother stand up with him, and his brother had the rings in their boxes in his pocket because that's my rule at a beach wedding. But in the early times, the best man was the best man with the sword, because it was his duty to protect the groom in those days and weeks before his marriage. If you remember when we were discussing what marriage used to be in a community, it was the marriage was going to make a union that could possibly mean a stronger, more powerful kingdom to be reckoned with. And there were terrorists and marauders and people trying to keep this from happening because it wasn't going to be in their best interest. And so, and people also believed in evil spirits in those days. They believed they were everywhere and they were planning to harm or even kill the groom. So the best man's job was to see that the groom was protected. And many churches in Europe and temples and mosques in the Middle East still today have places under the altar for the storage of weapons, spears and swords, knives and other kinds of defense, just in case there's trouble at the wedding. And in early times, the bride and groom were given up to a year together to produce an heir. The man did not have to work. They were to take that time to establish the marriage and produce an heir. And so the best man's job that first year was to stand guard at the doorway of their home to protect them until the bride became pregnant. And then once the bride was expecting, the new husband could then go forward and begin to fulfill his responsibilities to the community. So really, the best man is the forerunner of today's personal bodyguard. And it, of course, it would the best man would certainly be a person that the groom truly trusts. So let's talk about the bouquet. The bride today's colors were pink and orange. And in the past, those might not be colors that you would think would go together, but they are beautiful on the sand. Pink and orange rose petals. We had a big wide aisle for her to walk down with the pink and orange rose petals, and she had pink and orange flowers, lilies and roses, and it was lovely. It just was beautiful. So originally, the bride carried garlic and dill. And the reason for that was that in the old days, before penicillin and antibiotics, dill and garlic were used as ways to help people be healed. And they were considered helpful to the bride for her to not ever be sick. See, the whole idea in those days was that she was supposed to have a baby. You know, the woman has the womb. And the womb is what keeps the human race going. Without the women having the babies, we don't have any more human race. So she couldn't get sick, and so she carried garlic and dill. And also, those are fragrant herbs. And the other reason is because back before the days of running water and sewer systems and deodorant, and so you know, the bride would take her bath probably in a stream. Maybe, have you ever done that? I did that once up in the mountains, and that water is cold. But she would have dill and garlic, and then they began putting in other fragrances with fresh flowers. And then eventually it just evolved into just the beautiful fresh flowers, and this made her smell good. That was the whole reason for it originally, was so that she would smell very sweet. You know, this was sort of before Oscar de la Renta, and you know, Liz Taylor's White Diamonds perfume. So she carried this fresh bouquet, and she smelled. She not only looked pretty, but she smelled good. So that's why they carried the bouquet originally. And then the tradition of tossing the bouquet began because people, young women, would try to get something from the bride, and it sometimes would, you know, end up in them trying to tear her dress, get a little part of her dress, or try to get her glove or some little trinket or something, because they felt like if they were able to have some part of the bride's outfit, then it would be lucky, a lucky piece for them. And then maybe the power of the being chosen as a bride would come to them. So really to protect herself and to keep her dress from being ripped up, the bride said, okay, I'll toss my bouquet. And whoever catches my bouquet then will be the lucky one. Because it's kind of a metaphysical or sort of a symbolic idea that the love of the bride and groom is carried in the bouquet. And the magic of that love could be transferred to another person. So if catching the bouquet or catching the garter is an act of faith, which could allow a person to believe that he or she could now find happiness and have the man or the woman of their dreams come into their life, let it be so. Let that energy produced by the happiness of the married couple be thrown and released to all. Some brides have chosen not to just have single women try to catch the bouquet, though sometimes they don't want to, you know, draw attention to the fact that a woman is still single, but mostly just the single girls catch it because the whole idea is to catch the energy and to be the one that will be married next. So we talked about the brides all being dressed alike and how there could be some new traditions created there. So why do we cut and eat the cake? Well, I am very grateful to Judy Lewis for her article on Enduring Wedding Traditions, Customs, and Their Origins. Her website is www.hudsonvalleyweddings.com. And this is what she says. A wedding cake is the traditional centerpiece at the wedding reception. And you might find it interesting, however, that originally the cake was not eaten, but was thrown at the bride. It developed as one of those many, many, many fertility traditions that surround a wedding because ancient Romans believed that wheat and barley were symbols of fertility and the wedding cake had wheat and garlic in it. So they threw it at the bride. The unmarried women attending the wedding were expected to scramble for these pieces of grains also to ensure their own betrothals, much as they do today for the bridal bouquet. So they'd throw it at the bride, and then the single women would try to catch little pieces of it and eat it. So somewhere around 100 B.C., Roman bakers began creating small little sweet cakes. And the tradition of pelting the bride or breaking it over her head sort of died hard. But the custom mellowed into that of crumbling then the sweet cake over the bride's head. And as a help her be fertile and be able to have a child, she also ate some of it. And that custom was known as in the Latin as confaresto, which means eating together. So after all the cakes were used up, then the guests were supplied with handfuls of confetti, which was a sweet mixture of nuts and dried fruit and honeyed almonds. And so that they threw that at them, which later then became rice and now today is birdseed and bubbles. And then later on in England, this tradition was broadened into including the practice of washing down the cake with a special ale, and which was called Brydeealu, which was translated as bride's ale, and that's eventually what made the name that we use today, bridal. We call it the bridal gown and the bridal veil, and it came from that. So eventually these little decorative sweet cakes evolved into little small biscuits, and then guests were told to bring. I mean, this was the first BYOB. They were to bring their own biscuit with them to the ceremony. And it began by being very simple biscuits, but then you know how people are. It's like, oh, well, I'll make my biscuit better than her biscuit. And so they began to be very elaborate biscuits. And they began stacking them up. It became customary to pile all these biscuits and scones and baked goodies on top of one another in one great big heap, and the taller that it was, the more biscuits and things that were stacked all up, the more it symbolized how popular the bride and groom were and how prosperous they were. And so then they would start to have just a kiss over the big mound of cakes. And then there was a French chef who visited in London, and he saw this, and he just decided it was just a total mess and ugly, and so he began to create a beautiful work of art, an iced, multi-tiered wedding cake. And that was in the 1660s, and that has endured until today. Now, I see such gorgeous cakes. We have a place here in Southern California called It's All About the Cake, and you can look at their cakes online. They are just gorgeous. So eating the cake together in all cultures has been a symbolic act. It's where two become one and begin the new life together. But I'll tell you, brides and grooms, please don't smear it all over the face of your beloved. At one reception following the wedding I had conducted, the groom so tenderly and lovingly fed his beautiful bride. And then when it was her turn, she jammed it into his mouth and then smeared it all over his face and down the front of his tuxedo. And then she ran away as fast as she could, leaving him standing there with cake all over himself, totally embarrassed and shocked, being laughed at by the crowd. I was just horrified, and I wanted to go over to him and tell him I had not signed the marriage certificate yet, but if he wanted to make a quick getaway, but even that wouldn't help, because once you've done your public declaration of intent, you're really married. There wasn't anything he could do. Let me just say that everything that's done at a wedding should be done with dignity and holiness. And eating the cake together points to a shared life of love and respect, of friendship and loyalty and trust. So be very gentle and loving when you feed each other cake. So now let's look at children in the wedding. We didn't have any children in the wedding today. The bride and groom just had the maid of honor, and which was the bride's best friend, and then the groom had his brother. And the bride was brought in by her stepfather, walked her from up on the cliff, a little bit up on the cliff. She had to come down some stairs. And he walked her down the stairs, and then her real father was standing at the base of the stairs, and then he walked her down the aisle. So when it is a first marriage and there aren't children, then many couples wish to have little children in their wedding, to be like the ring bearer or the flower girls, little flower girls. I had one bride who had five little girls, and they were all like around 3 and 4 or 5, and she had them dressed like angels with little wings on their backs, and really not little, they were a pretty good size, these lovely fabric wings that somebody had made, and they just were adorable. I always tell brides, you know, it's your day, and if you want to share the limelight with some adorable little children, that's your choice. And if children are under 3 years old, I always suggest that there be little chairs for them to sit at the altar, and that there be a rehearsal, because if children go through what it is they're supposed to do during the ceremony, then they're usually pretty good at it. Although under 3 years old, they're going to just do what they're going to do. And you just have to let them do it. You don't want to have to make a scene. So the parents of any small children who are in the wedding have to be responsible for that child at all times. So, like, if they at the last minute won't walk down the aisle, or if they begin to cry or act out, then the parents of that child should go and get that child. And a lot of times the children are children of a maid of honor or a bridesmaid. And so I always say, well, you to have dad on the alert, or tell grandma, you know, to be ready to go pick him up. because the wedding day is for the bride. And I always tell brides that we shouldn't plan anything in the wedding that could, you know, possibly take away from your wedding day. And if there's any possibility that this child is going to cause a commotion, then just don't have them in the wedding. And always have somebody who's in charge of that child. If they begin to cry or cause a distraction, there really is nothing sweeter than a little girl dressed in her adorable little wedding outfit coming down the aisle just before the bride, throwing her rose petals. But there's just nothing worse then at the point where I'm either going to pray or declare the couple to be husband and wife, to have a small child say, I have to go pee-pee. You don't want that. Now, some couples have had a child together before the marriage. And some couples choose to not have the child in the ceremony in any way at all. They feel that the wedding ceremony is just for them. And that is up to the individual couple, and I always let them decide just how and if they want to include any children in the wedding. I did have a bride and groom who had had their child first. They were already a mother and already a father. But now they wanted to be husband and wife. And they had taken almost 2 years to decide if they did want to be married, because the girl was from a well-to-do family, and her mom and dad allowed her the option to decide if she really wanted to be married to this man. And that this child was the first grandchild on both sides of these two families. So the grandparents and the mother and the father, the bride and the mother and the father of the groom, provided these two young people a supportive environment emotionally and financially, just to give these kids a chance to fall in love. so that they would know that they really wanted to be together because they loved each other, not because they had had this child. But she finally said that she felt like she really was a part of him, and she was in love with him, and he said he couldn't imagine being with anyone else. So since the baby had been the result of a very strong physical chemistry that had been there from the very beginning, they wanted to include that baby then in the ceremony. The bride had been on the pill, but the pregnancy happened anyway. You know, there's just no 100% foolproof way to guarantee that you're not going to get pregnant. I guess an IUD is about the safest. So now the baby was going to be a part of the family created by two people who had not only loved him but also now loved one another. So it seemed appropriate to do the dedication of the child while they were celebrating this decision to spend the rest of their lives together. So she held the baby in her arms. Well, he wasn't a baby anymore. He was about 2 and a half. But she held him in her arms in her beautiful wedding gown, and then he held the baby wearing his full formal tuxedo. And this, and we did the dedication of the baby. We had him I declared them to be husband and wife, and then we had them make their promises concerning the child. And by the time we got through, everybody in the place had tears running down their cheeks, and it certainly was a wedding that everyone who attended will always remember. So one bride I had each of her sons, who were 11, 12, 14, and 17, lined up along the aisle. And as she walked down the aisle, she had each one join her. So by the time she reached the altar, she was accompanied there by her four sons. And her daughter was her maid of honor. And then another bride walked down the aisle with her two daughters, one 9 and one 7 on either side. And we asked the girls in the ceremony, we included them by asking the groom if he was willing to take the position of father figure to these girls and provide an environment for them where they could grow and mature into happy adults. And then I asked each girl if she was willing to allow the groom to be their father figure and accept his thoughts and guidance for her life for as long as she lived in the household. So at the rehearsal, the one little girl said, yes, very loudly. And the other little girl, the younger one, just nodded her head. And the mother explained that she was real shy and she just wanted to nod her head. So during the actual ceremony, the youngest girl gave her resounding yes. And the other little girl shyly nodded her head. And the guests got a big kick out of this. Then one of my brides wanted her 7-year-old son to also receive a ring. So after the bride and groom exchanged rings, I asked the groom, do you desire to create an environment and love and support where, I'll say, Johnny can grow and mature into a happy adult? And then I said, bride and groom, do you have a ring for Johnny? So then the vow they gave, when they gave the ring to him, the vow they said was, we give you this ring as a sign of our love. Please wear it as a sign to the world that you are a very important part of our family. And then the groom spontaneously said to the little boy, give me 5. And they hit their hands together, and then they embraced very passionately. But what made this ceremony so touching was that the son of the groom was a young man. He stood up with him as his best man, but he was not of his flesh and blood. But his former wife and he had raised this child, and he was very close to him, and he stood up as his best man. And then at the reception, he said in his toast how wonderful the groom had been to him as a father figure, and that he knew that the bride's son was truly in good hands. And all the rest of the afternoon, the little boy went around the whole room showing everybody his ring. He was so proud of it, and it made him feel included and very special to the both of them, which, of course, he was. Well, and when children from former marriages sometimes, you have to think in terms that they think they're getting married too. And one dramatic example of this was when I arrived at a lovely home of the groom where we were going to have the ceremony. This was at a place in Southern Orange County, that had been in the groom's family since before the time California was a state. It was back during the time when it was part of Mexico, and it was had these gorgeous big California sycamore trees on the land. And we did the ceremony out in the grass underneath this huge 400-year-old sycamore tree. So when I arrived there, I knocked on the door, and the bride's daughter came and opened the door, and she had her friend with her, and she said to her friend, "Oh, here's the minister who's going to marry us today." And then she laughed, and she says, "Oh, I mean, marry my mom." But her first thought was that she was also getting married. It was a wonderful story because the bride had been single for a while and had been raising this daughter on her own, and she worked at the bank where I did my banking. And one day she and her daughter were out hiking in the Saddleback Mountains here in Orange County, and they came across this big bone. And the mother said, she says, "I think this is something." So she said, "Let's just take it." And they next day she called one of the museums, the local museums, and asked if there was a pantheologist, I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but a person who studies these things, that could look at this bone. And the museum said yes, and so they put her in touch with this scientist, and she called him, and they made an appointment to see the bone. And so he took the bone and said, "Well, yes," he said, "this is a dinosaur bone." And so they set up some other meetings together. He wanted to show them the research, and of course the daughter went to all of these. And the two of them just got along famously. They just were into this research and finding out about all of it. And he was teaching her about the science of, archaeology and all. And the bride said she was sort of sitting back and thinking to herself, he's too old for her and too young for me. But as it developed, one night the bone man said, "How would you two like to go and have dinner?" And there at the table over dinner, they had eyes only for one another. And so we set it up for them to be married on this historic piece of land. And after the ceremony, I'll tell you, I've just had so many wonderful experiences doing this. After the ceremony, the father came over to me, and you could tell he had been crying, and he said, "This is the happiest day of my life." And I said, "Really? Why?" And he said, "You know, I never ever dreamed in a million years that my son would have such a happy day as today." He said, "You see, I have a genetic skin condition," and I had sort of noticed this about the groom, but I didn't say anything, "but they have like reptilian skin." And he said, "And I passed it on to my son," and he said, "and my son just had made this decision in his life that he wasn't going to get married and have children because he didn't want to pass it on to another generation." And so here he was able to be married, and his father just embraced this little girl, and he said, "This is going to be my little granddaughter." He said, "I never dreamed I would ever have this happiness." And he said, "To see my son so happy and for us to be able to have this extended family." So isn't that a great story? It's just almost my favorite story of my entire 18 years. So children in the wedding is when it's a second marriage and there are children from, former marriages, I usually suggest doing a family blending of the sand ceremony. Now, I did the sand ceremony today for my bride and groom at the beach. We took the sand from underneath their feet, from where they stood to say their vows, and we put it in a keepsake container that I supply that has shells in it. And then I tell them, now place this somewhere in your home where you will see it every day. It'll always remind you that you are eternally blended together in this keepsake container now. I said there wouldn't be any way we could separate out these grains of sand. And so let that become your reality every single day. So when there are children from a former marriage, then I take the sand from underneath the bride and groom's feet, so they'll always have the place where they stood to say their vows. And then each one of the children, however many there are, chooses the color sand, and then they pour in their sand. It's a very dramatic visual for children. They see themselves inside the container, and they feel that they're all part, you know, part of it, and that they're all in there together. And so I wanted to read to you a statement that was, we did the family blending of the sands with the children, and then this is what the bride and the groom wrote and said. To be a family is to love together, to laugh together, to cry together, to share the course of our lives with those who care about us. To be a family is to learn to relate to each other, work on our differences, help each other grow, and nurture each other's talents and gifts. To be a family is to hold hands and share a hug, blow a kiss, and to know that we are part of something special, a family. So may we treat one another with respect and honesty, for that is truly the only way we will ever grow together. And may we share the little discoveries and changes that each day brings, remembering that each one of us has something to say, and listening to one another is important. May we try to always be sensitive to one another's joys and sorrows, needs and changing moods, and realize that being a loving family means sometimes not understanding everyone all the time, but being there to love and to help just the same. We believe in living deeply, laughing often, and loving always. We have been brought together to support and care for each other. We believe that everyone's feelings count and that the uniqueness of each of us strengthens all of us. We believe in one another, and we believe in this family. They passed that out so that each person spoke part of it. There were some teenage kids in the family, and so they just read it around the circle and spoke it out. Wasn't that beautiful? So now we've discussed almost all of the traditions. If there is, let me just look here and see if I had any others. I've written a book about this, and you can, the not seeing each other before the wedding. I still have brides and grooms do that. It was always considered bad luck for the marriage if they saw one another before the ceremony. These were back in the times when they didn't know each other and hadn't seen each other, so it was considered bad luck to see each other. And the bride was heavily veiled, remember, in those times. And so I discuss this tradition with brides and grooms. I tell them the history, and I assure the bride and groom that there is no bad luck associated with them see each other before the ceremony, because, I mean, after all, today almost all brides and grooms live together and are intimate before they're married. So it's not as if they don't know one another. So customs can change, but today many brides and grooms, you know, choose to have their photos taken before the ceremony so that they can start the reception immediately afterwards and not keep guests waiting while they go take photos. So what I like to call that is the reveal moment. That's the moment when the groom first sees the bride for the first time in her beautiful wedding dress. And we do set this up. In my beach photo music package, I supply the photographer, and we set this up. We put the groom in a certain place, and then we bring the bride to him and let him see her for the very first time. We call that the reveal moment. And I look forward to this moment, too. I get to see the bride for the first time, too. Another beautiful bride, another beautiful dress, another beautiful bouquet, another beautiful engagement ring, diamond engagement ring. I love to see them. And every bride, to me, seems to be the next one is more beautiful than the last one. What a fun job I have, huh? So I think we've talked about pretty much all of the traditions, and I have been, we didn't talk about the rings. Okay, I did want to mention that about the ring is another tradition that has sort of come down through the ages, because originally the payment of the bride included a dowry in token and in pledge of the agreement that had been made between the bride's father and her husband-to-be. Some ceremonies still say that today, in token and in pledge. If I'm in a wedding where the minister says that, I want to stand up and say, well, how much did he pay for her? Because there is, it's the engagement ring today is the what was originally the dowry. But you know what, with the dowry, that remained the bride's property. Because in ancient times, a man could put away his wife for any reason. I mean, the woman didn't have anything to say about anything, but the man could put his wife away. He could just go into the city square and say, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. And then they were divorced. And the most common reason was because she couldn't have a child and couldn't produce an heir, but he actually could put her away for any reason. And so if she was put away, she needed her dowry in order to be able to live on her own, because the dowry agreement was the forerunner of our present-day community property laws. So as we've progressed in our civilization, that dowry has become a valuable ring as a sign of the engagement. And then the wedding ring seals the promise on the day of the marriage. Many couples still say that they give the ring in token and in pledge of the agreement that has been made between the two of them, which is represented by the promises that they make to one another. Did you know that originally only the woman wore the wedding ring to symbolize that the father's authority over her had been transferred to her husband? But eventually, both the man and the woman began to wear the wedding ring, and the wedding ring now is simply just a sign that you're married. So what I say is, I give you this ring as a symbol of my love promise to you and a sign to the world that you are my wife, and a sign to the world that you are my husband. And a lot of women say, a sign to the world that you are my husband. You know that some couples I marry don't wear exchange rings. Some young people today wear a tattoo. A lot of times, besides exchanging rings, if there are children in the ceremony, brides and grooms will give the children a gift, not always just a ring, but they give the gift as a symbol of our love and a sign to the world that we are a family. So those are some current traditions and things to think about. If you still want to do it, or do you have a new idea for a new tradition? Because let me tell you how a tradition starts. One person does it. And then somebody there sees them do it, and they think, ooh, that's a good idea. I think I'll do that. So then they do it. And then somebody sees them do it, and then they think, ooh, that's a good idea. I think I'll do it. And pretty soon there's a scientific quantum level physics that in quantum level physics, after 100 people do it, then spontaneously everybody does it, and now we have a tradition. So you can start your tradition. It can be a tradition that 100 years from now people will be doing, and they won't even know why why they did it back in those days. But most of what we do at a wedding is wonderful. It all makes us feel loved. It makes us be able to feel love. So I want to thank you so much for listening to this part of my traditions broadcast. Next week, we're going to go into color schemes, locations, and give you some ideas, some further ideas for your wedding. And I certainly welcome you contacting me if you have any questions or any ideas. Remember last week I asked you to give me a new name for husband. I'd like to hear if you still want to have it be husband and wife, or if there's a new name that you think we might start to use in the 21st century. So let me tell you how you can get in touch with me. My website is www.marcyann.com. That's my beach wedding site. And my email is mcheek0509@AOL. Been with AOL since 1997. Don't know how to change it. It's just out there too far. So mcheek0509@AOL. And I am on Facebook, Marcy Cheek. So let me hear from you. I would love to hear from you. And I do want to thank everybody so much for listening. I get those notices every week from Blog Talk Radio that you definitely are out there. And I just appreciate you listening so much. I wanted to play you a little bit of my music here. My music comes from visionarymusic.com. It's music that's specifically designed to support you in any area of your life where you want to be making any changes. And it also supports wellness, health and wellness. I play it in my office all the time. This one is to support DNA and RNA. And you know, we're advancing as humans. We're moving into 21st century galaxy men and women with more than 20 codons. So I'm creating new codons by playing this DNA RNA music. And I'll just let you listen to it for a few seconds. And then I'll be signing off by saying aloha, and aloha, as you know, is hello, goodbye, and I love you.